This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 70. Today I'm sitting here with Julie Kremer. We're going to talk about Google for Work, recorded live March the 5th, 2015. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. All right, everybody, I'm sitting here with Julie. We usually have a show that it's always with CJ and I do a little bit of banter in the morning where we talk a little bit about the latest news and stuff. But this time it's just going to be solo with me. We're going to skip all the news. I'm sitting here in Salt Lake City for the NGConf conference. It's all an Angular conference here. Julie, you happen to be here as well. You're from Google. You're here at the conference, not representing, I guess, the thing that we're going to talk about here, but just having a conversation here.
Yeah, I'm just at the Angular conference to learn more about Angular. I'm not really here for Google for Work at all.
Yeah, so I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a while because it's mostly to help our listeners just understand kind of like other stuff that's going on out there. We talk about, it is the Microsoft Cloud Show, but we talk about Microsoft Cloud stuff, but we also talk about the competitive landscape. We talked about some of the stuff that Google's done in the past with their cloud and the price wars have gone on with the compute and the storage stuff. We talked the same thing with AWS. But before we get into this, I mean, we've known each other for a while now. I don't even remember when it was we met, but it's been a long time, many years.
Right? It's been many years. I think we actually met during an Office developer session, maybe on campus at Redmond.
Yeah, long time ago.
Long time ago.
You bring that up. So you used to work for Microsoft way back in the day, right?
I did.
Yeah, so you were there. You were on the SharePoint team. Were involved with SharePoint.
Actually, right? I originally started out as one of the MVP types for the Visual Studio Tools for Office team.
Oh, Visto.
Way back in the day. And then I worked for Neudesic, which was a large systems integrator doing their SharePoint practice for many years. And then I did work for Microsoft in CADM focused on SharePoint development.
Gotcha. That's right. And then, so you left, and what was it, about four-ish years ago?
Yeah, I left about 4.5 years ago, and I moved to Google, which back then was before really anyone had done that. So I was one of the first sort of Microsoft enterprise-y people to move over to what at the time was then called Google Apps for Business.
Google Apps for Business.
And then at the end of last year, Google Apps rebranded themselves into Google for Work, which actually encompasses more than just apps. It is Google Apps, it's Google Maps for Business, and then the whole of Google's cloud platform. So the way you can think about it at Google is slightly different than Microsoft. So at Google, all of the products start out for consumers, right? It's a consumer-based company. And then there's an organization called Google for Work. And aside from ads, Google for Work is the only part of the Google organization that sells things.
Okay.
And so anything that we sell to an enterprise or an SMB or a mid-market customer all comes through the Google for Work organization. So operationally, so you know, deployment and ops and support, sales, marketing, all of that's within the smaller org within Google called Google for Work.
I see. Okay, so I've heard a lot, I guess I'm serving the role here, and this isn't a very hard role to serve because I don't really understand it all that much, but I'm serving the role of our listeners who may not be as familiar with what the story is. And so, you know, on the SharePoint side or the Office side, I'm very familiar with how we have Office 365 for business and stuff. I know Google has a similar kind of a product too, where you've got, it's like enterprise-style Gmail. So what can you say like about that? How does that all work?
Yeah, so I think it's probably for your readership or listenership.
They read the show notes, I know that.
Yeah, I've read your show notes.
Uh-oh, wow.
Yeah, you've got some good ones out there.
I appreciate
it. Plus, I feel good about standing in for CJ today. Some big shoes to fill.
You're much more attractive than CJ. Sorry,
Thank
CJ,
you very
but
much.
I was going to say, he's good at
He's got a better
too,
accent, though.
Oh, yeah, he's got a pretty good accent.
Okay, so getting back to Google for
Doesn't
Work.
Do anything for me, though.
So, as you probably know, it really all started with Gmail, right? And so Gmail, which grew up as a consumer product, at some point, a gentleman named Rajan Seth, who is the father of Gmail for Work, I guess at the time it was for business, he decided, hey, we could sell this thing to business. And him and a few other people actually just created that business as a 20% project within Google.
Really? So just a research kind of pet project?
They just thought they could do it. They spent our, you know, we have 20% projects at Google, which most people know about. Mm-hmm. And they decided they could make this thing a business, and it really succeeded. And so on the tail of sort of Gmail apps, when it became available as a product for consumers, they started adding in apps. And then maps, Google for Maps for Business. So there's a lot of companies that use maps. I'm sure you've seen them.
Oh, sure.
There's a lot of devices that have Google Maps in it. Audi, for example, is a big maps customer. So as we build more and more products that have an enterprise focus, they start to fall into the Google for Work family of offerings,
okay.
Right? So when Cloud Platform came out, it just became part of Google for Work. And then a sales org gets created. marketing gets created and all the operational and support options that we need for enterprise customers come together.
Okay. I know you have like Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets and all that kind of stuff as well.
There's three main families within Google for Work. So there's Google Cloud Platform, which you're probably most familiar with. So machine translations, Cloud SQL, all of that kind of stuff.
So that's
compute storage.
Like an Azure kind of, Azure AWS kind of competition.
Yes, like an Azure and AWS competition. So that's its own sort of product.
Okay.
And because it's mostly a developer product, it's actually run and sold almost entirely different than the rest of, and I'm sure that's the same is true for Azure versus Office, right? You just have to sell it different. It's a different customer, those types of things. So there's Cloud Platform and the offerings within that.
Okay.
Then there's Maps. So we call that our geo business, right? And that's mostly also now a developer-related sale as well, right? So it's mostly developers consuming APIs and putting maps inside their products.
Okay.
And then there's the Google Apps family. And so that would be Gmail, and the Google editors, so Docs, Sheets, Slides, which would be the equivalent of Office 365 or at least the Office web applications.
That's what I was trying to get to. I was trying to figure out what the common... I've heard like Microsoft going up against Google and vice versa for certain pitches on who's going to get this like municipality up on
right,
on
and
their
that's
cloud
generally
solution.
Google Apps.
Okay.
So when we would compete with Microsoft at a business, for example, the comparison is usually... It's not really a fair comparison, in my opinion, because usually Office on the desktop comes into play. So it's usually a comparison between Office 365 plus Office, the editors as a desktop application, and then Google Apps, which is purely in the cloud, right? And so that includes Google Drive for file storage, which would be OneDrive or SharePoint in terms of competition.
Right.
And then there's the editors, which is an Office competitor.
Right.
And then there's Mail, which Gmail and Outlook.
Kind of ties in. So it is really like, that sounds like that's really the Office 365 kind of compete.
Yeah. Thing. I mean, when I just left my previous role. I just moved into the engineering team, but my previous role within the Google for Work org, I was the head of sales strategy for Google Drive. And so basically, we're selling the whole suite, and usually it's either Office or us.
Gotcha. I see. How do you see like the adoption and stuff of people that were jumping in on Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets? The more I see it, it's kind of different communities. I mean, a little bit of the open source kind of, the open source community, also a lot of the startup community stuff, I see that incredibly popular on the Google Docs and not so much the Office side. People weren't using Office nearly as much.
The way that I see it, and I did not get PR approval for this interview, and I cannot remember the things I'm publicly allowed to say in terms of adoption and numbers.
Oh, so I didn't mean that. Yeah,
I'm going to keep it fairly
numbers.
High level.
That's all I'm looking for.
But,
sorry.
But in my experience, at least, what I've seen, the people who are most interested in apps, I think there's generally three audiences. So EDU is a very big adopter for Google Apps.
Education
and that's
space,
primarily,
yeah.
You know, younger children in the elementary schools. Like my kids both have apps in their school. So they use Chromebooks all day. They're using Docs. They have a special login. It's real locked down. So they can't get external. It's all internal.
Yeah.
Like I cannot communicate with my daughter through her Google Apps account.
Gotcha.
So,
but it's still all hosted.
It's still all just on the cloud.
Gotcha, okay, yeah.
And then we don't have anything that doesn't run on our own cloud infrastructure.
Okay.
And then there's the startup space or the small SMB space, sometimes called VSB, right? So smaller companies who really don't have the money or the IT support or the IT experience to go build their own infrastructure internally have traditionally turned to cloud platform solutions, right? And I think Office 365 is starting to get some adoption there.
Yep.
We just had a pretty big head start in the cloud.
Yeah.
And so in the SMB world, the very small business world, and in the startup world, I can't remember the last number that I publicly saw, but I think it was like 80% of all startups use Google Apps.
Oh, wow.
And it's because it's so fast number. And cheap to get turned on, right? You don't need anyone else to do it. You just put in your domain and kind of go.
Yeah.
Then there's the like sort of the traditional enterprise business. And I always found it funny when I first came to Google or when someone from Microsoft first joins Google, the first thing I tell them is stop using the word enterprise the way that you did there. Because at Google, we don't mean enterprise the way Microsoft does. So for us, an enterprise business is any size business that buys something from us.
Oh,
so
really?
That could be an SMB or a mid-market customer versus whatever that threshold is at Microsoft to be in the enterprise space.
Yeah, I guess Microsoft, when you say enterprise, you generally mean like corporate kind of a customer.
That's right.
You mean like a couple thousand employees, something like that at least.
Right, and at Google, we mean any paying business. True. Okay. In my opinion, that's partly why Google Enterprise changed their name last year to Google for Work, is because we really wanted to make sure that we message that we're about all businesses, not just big businesses.
Not just big business. That makes sense.
Okay. And then the big business space, there are a lot of companies that are adopting Google Apps. I mean, we've got some of the largest companies in the world, like BBVA, who are on Google Apps, Genentech, right? So we have almost all verticals. There's some, you know, movement into the cloud. I think the hardest ones, the ones that, you know, aren't moving to a cloud, aren't moving to any cloud. It's not
right.
Microsoft's not ours,
financial
right? They're just not ready.
And, yeah, biotech.
Some of the rules and regulations that are assigned to them, they're not ready to be in the cloud.
Right.
But we're starting to see that change. And, you know, we've got biotech and financial services. Well, I mean, BBVA is one of the largest financial institutions in the world, and they're using apps, right?
Yeah.
Government is using apps. The GSA is a big apps user. So I think we've got business in all sectors.
Okay.
But I think the ones that are passionately in love with us are startups and EDU in particular.
That's pretty cool. That's cool. So you're saying apps. So on my side, when I hear apps, I usually think of like it's something you can build, right? Is there a story like that in the Google Cloud space?
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. So I think...
I know we talked a little bit about this beforehand.
Yeah,
about how deep we'd go into this.
That was fun. So I struggle with the naming of Google Apps. I think it's something that internally we are aware causes confusion.
Okay.
Even, you know, here earlier today when someone referenced Google Apps, the guy next to me was like, is that an app?
Yeah.
No, it's Google Apps. So Google Apps are our products. And then we do have methods and developer technologies for building apps on top of our products, right?
Okay.
So, for example, we've got large partners, just like Microsoft does, who do deployments and customizations and write solutions for business processes like workflow or whatever. And there's multiple ways in which they can do that. So, of course, cloud platforms as an entire computing platform for developers to write custom solutions on. And the apps, Google Apps family, mm-hmm. also has a slew of APIs that are available to those developers. So you could be writing an app on App Engine, but using Drive's backend storage. So maybe you're writing a user-specific solution, and you have Drive for Work at the company you're building the solution for, and therefore they have unlimited storage with Drive for Work. So now you can just use the Drive API and have that be your storage mechanism.
I gotcha.
Or, for example, we have a lot of mobile game developers who, and I don't think I'm allowed to say this statistic publicly, so I won't, but yeah. Use your imagination that some of the biggest games on an Android device are actually using Sheets in the background to maintain user logs.
Really?
And they are using that through API services through the apps family.
Wow,
yeah.
Really?
And then we also have technologies like AppScript, which is, you can think of it like VBA inside of Office, but this is AppScript inside of Google Apps. So you can use that to write web apps that interact with Google Sites or Google Docs or Google Drive. I just wrote one the other day, for example, for my yoga teacher who needed to ingest thousands of photos from users all over the world. So I wrote a little tiny app script that publishes a little web app that was a simple form, upload this file, and it submitted it to just uploaded the file to a shared Google Drive folder. So now someone with no technology was able to, you know, click two buttons, upload these pictures, and then it was shared to me and my yoga teacher, so he now had access to all of these files without having to know technology.
That's pretty cool, and that's what it's supposed to work. It's supposed to just be seamless, be easy for them to use.
And so AppScript is what they actually referenced earlier in the prototyping session here at NG Conference. Because it's such a simplistic language, and I don't mean that it's not technically proficient, but
no,
it's simple to use,
yeah,
and simple to understand, and it's just basic scripting, that you can basically use it to do prototyping very fast. So we find a lot of our partners who are doing services and solution development use AppScript to do traditional POCs, which, by the way, we used to do in the SharePoint world all the time.
Right, right.
So you do a little POC, you figure out whether your idea is feasible as a business process, and then, you know, you may need to scale out of AppScript and into App Engine, for example. Or you may be able to use it in AppScript. I've been recently interviewing a bunch of customers about their AppScript usage, and there's some amazing applications being written just all in AppScript.
Really?
Just so things that traditionally might have been built on SharePoint.
Yeah.
Workflows, you know, employee onboarding, HR stuff, all of those traditional use cases that a traditional business has.
Is AppScript used to just to interface with Google Apps, or is it used to build, like, it looked, when they showed it up on the screen the other day, I'm not familiar with it, when they showed up on the screen earlier today, it just looked like JavaScript. So it's just JavaScript. And then does it make it AppScript because it's got, like, there's APIs that you can call into the Google Apps, like Docs, Sheets?
You can look at it that way. So you can look at it two ways, right? AppScript is like the VBA inside of our apps.
Okay.
This is why it's hard to have the name Google Apps.
I'm struggling with it a little bit. Yeah.
So AppScript is like VBA inside of our editors and Drive and all those things. So for example, you can go into a Google Sheet and you can click on a button that says Script Editor. And right, you'll get that Script Editor, you know, next to your Google Sheet, and your Google Sheet can be the back end to that Script Editor.
Right.
I know no one on there can see my hands making motions, but that's cool. You can.
I do it all the time when I'm sitting there going through this. People are like, we can't see what you're describing. I'm like, you should see the whiteboard. It looks great.
But so there's AppScript, and AppScript allows you to, I look at it as automation, but that's not all AppScript can do, because it actually does publish a web app, unlike VBA, which couldn't escape the editor, per se. AppScript can.
Okay.
So it actually can do sort of both.
So the AppScript creates a website, or
it creates a web app that you publish. So you actually have a publish button, and when you hit the publish button, it actually creates a little web app for you. So that the example that I just gave you for my yoga teacher, that really had nothing to do with any editor. It was not in Google Docs or Google Sheets or anything. It just produced a little web app form that I had devised from HTML and CSS, right, and JavaScript.
Okay.
And then the users used that form, and the form submitted to Google Drive's API, which I had full access to because it was AppScript.
I gotcha.
But then, because the one thing I think people get confused on when we start talking about developers around Google Apps, is most developers think when they first come into the platform and start looking, that AppScript is all we have available.
Yeah. So
but like I said earlier, AppScript is just one way. There's also all of our APIs that are exposed to any, like I believe you can actually call them from like .NET even if you really wanted to.
There's a bunch of REST APIs. They're all protected with OAuth 2. And similar kind of story. To that point, it's a similar story that they have in Office 365 where you can still get to your data through standard-based stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And so the new team I'm on is actually focused on, you know, what are those APIs? What do we need to do to make them more accessible to more developers? What does AppScript need to look like in its next incarnation?
Gotcha.
What else do we need to do to have a developer story, like maybe have one?
Yeah. That's the next question I was going to ask, is around the developer story. Like, so is there a big developer community around this stuff? Like, is there?
Oh, absolutely.
There is?
Yeah. There is. It's just not really been a focus for Google in the past, I think. And so, you know, I think when you talk about community, you're thinking of things like SharePoint, and you're thinking of SharePoint Saturday, and you're
thinking, like ngConf or something like that. So I'm spending a lot more time in these kind of venues in the last year or so. So it's like I see the developer communities that are out there. And so
we have Google Apps hackathons, right?
Okay.
We do have those. In particular, in emerging markets, we've had a lot more developer community around Google Apps. I'm still learning what that community looks like, and do we need to build a community? And I'm still very new in my new role. So I know that the hackathons have been particularly effective in international locations. And I know, like, one of the reasons that I'm here at this conference is, should Google Apps have a presence here at a conference like this? Mm. Are Angular developers interested in that kind of sort of office-y productivity development subjects?
Judging by the reaction that we saw last night, I mean, we did an Office 365 hackathon.
I know I wanted to ask you, like, how did that go? Were Angular developers excited about, let's call them, productivity apps?
I'll be completely frank. It's funny, I just did an interview with Jeremy Thake on his podcast, the Office 365 podcast, and I'll say the same thing that I said with him just a minute ago, that I walked into this expecting to be like the target. And thankfully I knew that Jeremy was coming. I'm like going, oh, so they'll shoot at you because you're Microsoft. I thought I was like going, no one's going to like you, whatever like that. You're just, whatever. I was thought I'd be walking into a completely hostile audience, standing up there on stage today and doing a TypeScript session. But
great session, by the way.
Thank you. Appreciate it. The reaction on Twitter felt very good. Very good. It's amazing. They've already got the sessions up on YouTube, too. It was blown away. They zoomed right in on my face when I started throwing one of the t-shirts. I was looking back and forth. I'm like, oh, that's weird seeing myself that close. But anyway.
At least you didn't have to follow the other guy.
No.
You didn't see that session. It was that was the best developer session I've ever seen.
So it was not the protractor one, but the guy
the
that did the
NG what?
The NG what, yeah. So I started watching that. I've got it paused up there. I want to make sure I came down. I didn't miss you today. So it's I did want to see that. I wish I had seen that. But
it's the best developer session I've hands down ever seen.
That's awesome. Awesome. He's got a ton of other videos up on YouTube of like just Angular comedy routines that he's done. It's great. But so the Office 365 hackathon we did last night, we didn't expect, I had very low expectations. I didn't think people were going to be interested in it, especially knowing the other hackathons that were going on. I didn't think that people would be interested in it. I didn't think that it was going to be something that they'd be terribly energized to do. Microsoft did bring 8 Xbox Ones to give away to the winners, so we thought that, okay, hey, that's got some pull to it. Surprise gift, they actually all got Jambox Minis too, just for participating. They didn't know, we didn't know that we were actually giving them that until about 30 minutes before the session was over. But what was cool about it is that it was really interesting seeing the majority of people that were in there. We had 11 teams, anywhere from 1 to 4 people in each team, that all just went through and they just started building some sort of an add-in for Outlook or Outlook Web or some sort of an add-in for Excel. And they, in the span of 2.5 hours, we spent about 20 minutes at the beginning explaining here's why you should care about this stuff, and then showed 2 demos and gave them the code to it in the labs. They hit the ground running and they just started being productive.
Nice.
And some of the stuff that they built was freaking awesome. One guy, one team, this is really cool, it was 4 people that had never met before. They formed a team together and they did like a marketing automation kind of a thing. So what they did is that when you went to go send an email, it opened up a form. You could put your account information in for a site called keen.io, which is a basically an email tracking kind of a thing. Think Constant Contact kind of stuff or MailChimp. And you could click a button and it would add in, after you logged in, it would add in a 1x1 pixel, basically a beacon, a tracking pixel, into the email. You send the email away. When the email would go to whoever it was getting to and they would open it up, the request would go out for the image, it would phone home, and then when they went back, the original sender who sent the email, when they go out to their sent items, they look at the email, they can open up the app again and they can see how many people have opened it up. So that kind of thing, they got that working in about 2 hours.
That's awesome.
Another guys went through and they had an Excel spreadsheet that when you selected the data in it, it used on the task pane, it used the D3 JS data visualization engine to show an exploding pie chart. Another one the guy did, this one is like, I told him, you should package this up right now, ship it, and start making money on it. You work in an organization that's got a lot of facilities, a lot of buildings, a lot of meeting rooms. And you probably have, when you have a meeting, you probably have to book the room, right?
Yes.
So Microsoft has that problem. I know Google probably has that problem. Every enterprise you go into has that problem. And so I've only done this with Outlook, but I know that when you go to create a meeting and you say, I want to create a meeting, you say, add a location.
Yep.
It's just one big ass list, right? So what he did is you click a button and say, I want to do a meeting. And it showed like an exploding pie chart.
Mm-hmm.
So when you could see like, oh, this big section right here is US. You clicked on US, showed all the meeting rooms in the United States, but the pie chart expanded and it showed now for all the different states. You could kind of drill and find the different states, find the meeting you're looking for, go ahead and say add the meeting, it would add it as a location.
Nice, so those are kind of solutions that you can write with apps too. So for
example,
cool. I just spoke with a developer a couple days ago who has written that exact, didn't have a pie chart though,
yeah.
But he wrote a calendar, so we also have a calendar API, so
right.
Calendar is also part of the Google Apps family,
okay.
It's part of Gmail calendar.
Okay.
He wrote a calendar extension, I think it was a Chrome extension actually,
okay.
That when somebody went in to schedule a meeting, they got a resource locator, and his worked for a particular type of resource locator, which I believe was a country drill down, but you just type like Czechoslovakia and it would pull up all the rest of what was available in that country. So yeah, those types of solutions, we're finding all kinds of developers that write add-ins. So we have multiple ways to deploy solutions as well. And I think you heard me reference that this person did a Chrome extension.
Right, right.
But you can also do what we call an add-on. So we have a store, like the Office 365 store.
Right.
Right, and in our Google Marketplace. So you can have an add-on that end users can install, or your admins can make available to a domain. And then you can also have the AppScript, which you can publish and share. A cool thing about AppScript is I could actually share it developer to developer, just like you can share a document.
Oh, cool.
So that makes, actually...
Do you have to send them anything, or do you send a link?
It's just like sharing a Google document. So I
could
click on my script and say, share it with Andrew, and then you're going to get the link to the in your email, just like it was a shared document.
Cool.
So we have add-ons, we have Chrome extensions, and then we have the app scripts that is sort of integrated into the whole thing.
That's interesting because it's like, it sounds, I'm drawing some parallels here between like the 365 and the Google for Work, the Google apps. In a sense, I'm trying.
Google for Work is the name of the organization that sells and
Google
operates it.
Okay.
But Google Apps is the product.
Okay, so, and everything's all web-based. So
yep.
If I want to go through and I want to build an add-in, I can have the add-in running inside of like the calendar, right? But it's going to be hosted, in the app engine?
Like, no, or is it actually, it depends on how you write it.
So
right?
If I write it as an app script, then the script is going to stay right there. It's all going to run within the calendar.
Yes.
But if I write it as an extension that's going to be an actual like little website that's running over here that's going to be interfacing with the calendar, then it's like probably running a Google App Engine and then being surfaced inside the calendar.
Correct.
Okay. And then the other one is if I want to go like And so I could do like what people were doing last night, similar to what they did when you build an add-in for Office.
Mm-hmm.
It's an XML file that, that basically a registration that says everything lives over in that website, right?
Yeah, you have to do a registration of your add-on. The same
similar kind
Microsoft is just as smart as Google, right?
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
We've, you know, the technologies to get, you know, things into products are probably very similar. I can't even remember right now Microsoft's, you know, internal infrastructure for an add-on, but I assume it's probably fairly close to Google's.
Yeah. Okay, so then and then the other option, like where in Outlook today or other Office clients, they can use Visto or they can use a new extensibility model to actually extend the clients, but the client is the browser, so that would be a good Chrome extension would be a way to go through and to give it that more kind of a rich thing that you can't exactly do in the browser.
Exactly.
Okay. That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, but I think, you know, one of the challenges for Google Apps developers is that a lot of these developers are coming out of other worlds. So maybe they were Lotus Notes developers, or maybe they were Microsoft, you know, developers. Some of the developers I've talked to recently are like actually ex-SharePoint developers. And because we have so many opportunities for developers, it's really hard to funnel them to the right one.
Gotcha.
So I think that one of the struggles for people onboarding into it is really understanding which way to choose to write your extensibility or your solution.
I got you. So just for the listeners, sorry for the background noise. So just so you can put some context in it, the microphone didn't screw up. So we're sitting in a coffee shop and somebody apparently decided to get an espresso. So there's got
at 5 o'clock at night.
I know. It's like, that's a, it's like, I know it sounds like someone's like getting dental work done all of a sudden. Probably it's coming across on my headphones, but there we go. We're done. Yeah, don't adjust your dial on that one. Okay, I can't remember where we were on that one.
We've kind of winded around in this conversation, which is great because I was worried about what you were going to ask me.
Well, I, honestly, and like I told you before, it's like, I don't know what I'm going to ask you other than I don't know what this landscape looks like, and I've always been curious about it, so it's just let's see where it goes. And that's, it's been very helpful, though, answering a lot of the questions I had.
And then I think the other thing to think about, right, is like I said, Google Apps is just one of the products.
Okay.
So we have a lot of developers, for example, who are combining things like maps, so you can use maps into apps, right? Or we even have products that, you know, kind of relate to those things. So there's so many opportunities that aren't just in the apps family that some of the newer solutions I'm finding developers write are unique to the cloud or to the abilities of what the cloud has.
Gotcha.
So we have, you know, some educational solutions for kids that, you know, are based on sharing and having that sort of real-time sharing mechanism or real-time editing within the editors, where people have done some really cool solutions on top of like how to submit homework, how to do tests, right? Those types of sort of educationally related solutions. And those are translating now into the business world. So workflow is still the number one ask that we get. And there's all kinds of ways to do workflow.
Yeah.
And sometimes what I've found is that a lot of companies, especially companies coming off SharePoint, still feel like they have to do these really complex business solutions when maybe they don't. So I actually spent a lot of time, or I used to in my previous role, talking about, well, do you really need to do this as a developer thing? Mm-hmm. Or can you solve this with out-of-the-box features and functionalities instead?
Yeah.
And use that money to automate processes that you never could get to before or that were harder to solve.
It's always better to go out of the box and sit and try and build something. I mean, it's even the developer me saying that. It's like, no, don't rush to build. Try and go out of the box. Let somebody else maintain it.
Yeah. So I think as what I'm seeing is as companies move into the cloud, the solutions that they're developing, it's kind of like those old Lotus Notes days. So I don't know if you remember those days.
Oh,
or
I do.
You know, I migrated.
I try to block them out.
I know, but it still exists in pockets. You'd be surprised. I just talked to a big, huge household name brand that I'm not going to out them on this. They still have 2,000 Lotus Notes databases.
Wow.
Yeah. But they've only targeted 200 to be rewritten into the cloud.
And the rest are just going to
go away and retire.
So it's funny you say that. I went on site to a very high-end furniture maker one time. Great chairs. Again, nameless.
Chairs.
Yeah, great chairs. And I was brought in to help them to as a SharePoint like on-prem class. And I walk in, and they're all notes. I'm like, oh, I didn't know you guys were all notes. It's like, so what's your development background? And I go, well, we're notes developers. I'm like, I don't consider that a pure developer kind of experience, more of like extensibility or customization kind of scripting kind of a thing than it is so much of like, you know, doing development the way a lot of people think of development. And so Yeah, same thing. It's like, it's surprising. You walk into an organization, it's like, going, wow, you're still on notes. It's like, I thought that the most of the licenses that were sold on notes were people who couldn't migrate off it before the license expired.
But I think that actually what I'm seeing, and I'd be curious if you're seeing this in your work too, is we're sort of at that same impasse with any other technology. So as companies move into the cloud, and then they look at, oh, we've had all these business processes, maybe it was on some workflow tool, not even necessarily SharePoint, but K2 or whatever,
yeah.
Or we've done all these custom solutions that we wrote in whatever language we were writing in. I feel like what I see, especially in larger companies, is they're sort of doing that inventory.
Yeah.
So as we move into the cloud, and the same is true with Office 365. So let me give you this example. Customer after customer comes to us with these Excel files.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, you know, I have 5 stores, and all 5 stores have to send me their inventory. And then one admin sits down and combines all the Excel files. Or we wrote a macro to do this, you know, ingestion process.
Yep.
The same is true with Office, that is true with Google. When people can do that all in real time together, those business problems go away,
yep.
And new business problems become important.
Right.
And so what I'm finding is, as people move to the cloud, what we do as developers, or I'm not even a developer anymore, but what you guys do as developers has changed, right?
Yep.
And so a lot of these companies are in that same predicament that they were with Lotus Notes, where they have to do an inventory of everything they've written,
yep.
And then decide what goes with the new way of doing work,
yep.
And what solutions actually need to be written in the cloud, and then how do they realize that with today's tools?
It's a term, I used to hate this term. I'm starting to really appreciate it a lot more, and it's sitting down and reimagine your problem. Like, mm-hmm. Right now, you've got the baggage of, you know, this is the way we've done it. We went through and we all had different spreadsheets and we all did our work and then we emailed them all together and then we pulled them all and we did everything. It's like, okay, let's stop and not think that way anymore. Let's try and think of a different way of doing it. Like, how would I merge those spreadsheets together in Google Cloud, or how would I do it in the Microsoft or Amazon Cloud? How would I do that? It's like, let's take a step farther back from that. Does it make more sense that you just log into a certain place and the data that you're collecting right there, you instead put it in that one place, and then I'm doing that at office number 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, and everything is being kind of consolidated while I'm doing the data entry. Don't think this. And it's funny, a lot of companies, they don't think this way, because this is a new way of doing it, relatively new way of doing business for a lot of businesses.
It's a relatively new way of thinking as a user.
Yeah, as a big, yeah.
When I used to go around the country for the last 4 years, I've spent a lot of my life on a plane traveling from country to country, and you know, I'd come back and people would ask me Googlers would ask me how it was. And I said, you know, my biggest challenge with this is I'm constantly dealing with an old frame of reference.
Yeah.
Where I'm talking to these users, but the biggest challenge is getting them to think along the lines of what the cloud can do for them.
Yep.
And I'm actually seeing this change as Office 365 has come into play. So if you remember 4.5 years ago when I joined Google, there was no Office 365.
No, there wasn't.
And as I've seen Office 365 grow and mature, and Microsoft put more features into it, and especially new features, as Microsoft has, you know, doubled down on their innovation with things like Sway, mm-hmm. and Delve, you're starting to see the user base start to see that things are different too. And I think that's going to help us.
Yep.
But I'm actually super excited for the types of solutions we'll build with things like Firebase and having real time. And I think that changes everything.
I do too.
And I think when we start to have the ability to visualize real time into the solutions we build, I think everything's going to be different.
I think it is too. And I think the fact that it's also being able to remove the burden of having to always install something and always have something to go. We have to figure out, you know, I have to build some client and have to roll it out. And oh, what version you want here? What version you want here? Now it's all just... No, they're web applications, right? It no longer was just saying, oh no, what if I'm disconnected? What if I'm not? Oh, you don't have your laptop with you all the time, right? You don't have your whatever, and so you're not always going to be connected, but it's safe to assume the majority of the time you are going to be able to be connected, and just kind of, and a lot of people are accepting that, okay, I just can do business when it's like this. There are offline stories to it, but you could have, like, you know, we're here at Angular conference. There are offline stories for Angular. If you build your apps the right way, you could cache data locally in the browser. When it detects that you get reconnected, it goes through and it pushes everything back out. Using things like Firebase, using things like even Google Spreadsheets, Google Sheets, or using like things inside of Office 365 as well. This new model, though, of, you know, having everything working more for rich clients in the browser is to me, it's a much better story, because there's no worry about versions. You can have easier to maintain, easier to roll them out, less maintenance. So, yeah.
It's better for everyone.
I think it is. I like it. It's funny that, you know, we're going through a similar kind, not just the phase of, like, you know, customers trying to leave the mindset of, I'm a Notes customer, and I'm trying to migrate from Notes to one of the more current platforms. We're seeing a similar kind of a shift, a challenging shift in the SharePoint space, where you've got companies who have built major customizations using this whole farm solution model.
Yep.
And then now they're trying to shift over and say, now I want to go work for the cloud, or I want to build things more that are cloud friendly and that work with this new model that is, my stuff isn't inside SharePoint anymore, it's kind of running beside SharePoint, and my data may be in SharePoint, but all the custom like business I'm building that's sitting on the outside or sitting beside it. Similar, it's a mind shift that's really hard to get some people to buy into because they're so used to the way it's been done. And they keep trying to say, well, I've done this in this way. How do I go through and port that over to this new model here? And sometimes you have to look at it and be like, think about what you're doing. Does it make sense? Because that if you're trying to get from that old model, that old, I guess, environment, not model, I'm trying to get from that old environment of how SharePoint used to be to over the new one.
Yeah, you know, if I could ask Microsoft, and I'm sure they wouldn't tell me, but if I could,
yeah.
I would ask them if they're seeing similar things to what I was seeing before I moved roles, which is, I can't tell you the number of RFPE-like things that got submitted to me where it was a SharePoint infrastructure, and how do we migrate all of this to a cloud? You're like, but you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And then once you can convince them of that, and this would be the part I would be interested in how Microsoft is perceiving it, the feedback that I was getting was, okay, great, we can buy into that, but now we don't want to customize anything. Everything needs to be out of the box, and that's not going to be possible, right?
Yeah.
Because there are smaller business problems that have to be solved and customized to that. But the trend that I was seeing was, stop customizing as much and start buying add-ins. So these smaller developers have such an opportunity to build vertical or very specific solutions for types of businesses, right? Like maybe a legal table of contents add-on or whatever it is that will help businesses solve common problems. But I was hearing, or at least from a lot of CEOs, well, we don't want to customize as much. We want as many out-of-the-box things. And so what I would ask Microsoft is, you're seeing your ecosystem move into doing more, I guess, product-centered, but I don't want to call them whole products, you know,
right.
Like little add-ons sort of things, versus a bunch of developers customizing the way that SharePoint was. I mean, I made a ton of money off developing solutions for SharePoint. I stayed home with my kids for 10 years doing nothing but custom development.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that world exists still today.
It's still, so I can kind of answer the question for you. I know that there's a lot of customers, from my perception, there's a lot of customers that still want to do that with SharePoint. And there's a lot of customers that want to do that in Office 365 with SharePoint. But the push from Microsoft these days is to try and keep people from doing that so much in Office 365 because of
the infrastructure that they have to maintain.
Well, the infrastructure you have to maintain, but then you know how SharePoint works in the sense that, you know, when you customize something, you lose what the underpinnings have. So there's this whole battle that's going on right now. We joke around a little bit, but to me it's very much like the Korean War, where it's the North Koreans and the South Koreans. They're still at war. They're just not shooting at each other right now. And it's very much the same way, I think, with Microsoft and with the customer base in terms of, I want a custom master page. And today they're just like, Microsoft says, look, we can't roll out new features to you because we put them in the master page. And if you go through and you customize it, you won't get them. The customers are like, yeah, but I need to be able to do a corporate custom brand, how should I do it? The answers coming back, I still don't think are very satisfactory to people. They're all like, just use CSS, and when you have to do other advanced customizations, use JavaScript. And it's like, that's not really such a branding story, I think, that works so well, especially on corporate branding, marketing kind of teams and stuff. So
I think I read about this on your Facebook page once.
Oh yeah, there's a bit of a battle.
I think there was some MVPs who were pretty heated about it.
There are some MVPs, and the cool thing is there's actually a bunch of people in Microsoft who have jumped in, and they've done a really good job of engaging the community. Did you know Steve Walker?
Mm-hmm.
At times, so Steve is kind of like the face for Microsoft in this, and it's really good to kind of see the discussions going on back and forth. Unlike the Korean War, we actually are talking and we're actually having good dialogues and learning about each other and the problems that are, you know, what problems do they have that they are, why are they saying what they're saying? But then for them to understand, here's what we need to do and you're not letting us do it. So the discussion going back and forth. So that kind of a thing though, you are seeing more customers that are finally, I think, coming around. That's not really a good way to say it. You say coming around, it kind of implies that this is the way they should be thinking. I see a lot of customers adopting or accepting this new cloud model, which is, you take the way it is,
mm-hmm.
and if you do need to change it,
then there's ways to extend or customize it outside and to buy add-ins or build add-ins and to kind of augment it. You look at a company like, see, one company that hasn't seemed to really had to deal with this so much is Salesforce. Because Salesforce started and has always, you've had big CRM solutions, but most of them you don't do major customizations in a sense to like the Siebels and the SAPs and stuff like that. Salesforce, it is what it is. There is a development story where you can kind of add stuff into it, but you don't change the, you're like, I want my Salesforce to be like my corporate brand.
Exactly.
No, you don't. It's Salesforce. That's what you're doing. You're using Salesforce. Yeah, it's interesting to see how all this stuff is evolving right now.
Yeah, and you know, for me, with my background, especially with Visto and VBA and having worked on SharePoint workflow and on developers, one of the things that, you know, when I see, and I'm still friends with so many of you that I see your Facebook threads and whatever. But
you see our rants and our cries and whines.
But one of the interesting things to me is that, you know, 4 years ago when I came to Google, I had to realign what I thought, you know, languages. When I took this job, I had to pass an eng test at Google, right? And I asked them, could I do it in .NET? Because I'm so much more familiar with that as a language. But no, I had to write it in Google language, in JavaScript, I think. And I'm fascinated by how many of you are changing the language base of which you operate within, right?
Yeah.
So like you're at an Angular conference, but probably the coolest thing that you did today is, and you didn't really do it, although I think in some parts your session represented it, is this partnership or collaboration between Google and Microsoft. And I could only hope, and I understand that Office 365 and Google Apps really compete, but I could only hope that all of us know each other and we could find a way to collaborate on these sorts of subjects too, because I feel like from a developer perspective, if we can do what they did with TypeScript, right, and sort of collaborate on what the biggest challenges are in our industry, we could maybe find a way to make it better for all developers.
Yeah.
Not saying we won't always compete with Google Apps versus Office 365.
They'll always be there, yeah.
But I think that there's a compatibility play too. So for example, we have a lot of customers who still have Office.
Yeah.
And we don't ask them to go remove Office. I mean, it's great if they do for us, but it's not necessary, right? You can use Gmail. We have lots of customers who use Office. Some people use Office, some people use Docs, you know. We find that when people start collaborating, the sort of tail of using apps goes up and Office goes down. I mean, so there's things like that, but I truly believe at the heart that if we could come together over some of these big issues like you were just mentioning, it would be better for all of us and all businesses overall.
Yeah.
So maybe we should make it a point.
It's, you know, it's funny because you see more. I was anti-Google for the longest time.
You were?
I was anti-Google for the longest time. And then something happened.
Until I gave your kids those shirts, right?
Well, that definitely helped. That definitely helped. Which they freaking love those shirts. So I still wear mine. I get the Cookie Monster.
I'm gonna have to get your kids some new ones though, because
they're
big.
Not gonna fit. Yeah. Well, my 5-year-old is wearing what my 10-year-old, what you gave my 10-year-old. I'm trying to remember which one it was. She has the white one now.
There was the one
Elmo.
With the Bigfoot or Elmo, Monster.
Yeah.
Right?
So Cookie Monster's too small for her. He got Elmo, and now she's now wearing Elmo.
Nice.
Yeah. So she's a little sister, so hand-me-downs. I didn't use Google for anything. I was like Microsoft, 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 Microsoft. I used to run a training business, and I sold my interest in that training business back in early 2013. And within a couple months, something changed where I just kind of felt like I can look at other stuff. Like, I don't feel like I can do. And that's about when I switched to using Chrome. I was like, I'm going to try using Chrome for a month.
I remember when you posted about that.
Yeah, I was like, holy crap, this thing is awesome. I love it. Now I won't go
to
any
guess
other
what?
One.
You have now.
Oh, Chrome.
You have a Mac.
And I have a Mac, yes. I have a Mac. And that's even adopted over there, over Microsoft. Is it?
When I left Microsoft, I was not allowed to have a Mac.
Oh, no, they can have a Mac.
And oh, by the way, every Microsoft person who comes to Google, well, in my previous role at Google for work, because I was pretty senior there, all the new Microsoft people would end up calling me. And I became well known as the AA group for ex-Microsoft people. And so when they would call me and be like, you know, what's your hint?
Yeah.
I would say, 2 weeks just to get used to the MacBook.
Yeah.
Don't beat yourself up.
Yeah.
You're going to be like, this scroll thing sucks.
Yeah.
But it'll come.
Oh, yeah. And then you'll be looking for, I can't get a Windows machine unless you have a trackpad like that.
Yep, exactly.
It's
every time I have to use my son's Windows machine, I'm like, I just want to throw it out the window.
So that sounds familiar. I'm like that with Windows 8. I'm just like, I'm not a Windows 8 fan. That's not what caused me to switch. I honestly switched to a Mac under duress. my machine died. I was in the middle of doing something. I was doing SharePoint. I needed to finish what I was doing. I couldn't go buy a machine. Where I live, you can't just go buy a 13 gig machine or something, or a 32 gig machine, and have VMs running on it by the end of the day. I had to do mail order. So I had to do like Lenovo or Dell or something like that. And all of them was right at Christmas, and none of them were able to ship for about 2 weeks.
So you just went to your local Apple store?
So I was like, you know what? I was doing VMs, and I was working on a course for Pluralsight. I was like, I use Adobe Creative Cloud. I was like, I can install VMware Fusion, to get Windows going on it. I can finish that part of it, and I can do all the editing with Creative Cloud because it's both OS X and Windows. I was like, I had full intention to buy that machine, use it for 2 weeks,
and then
turn
back.
Around and send it back and get my money back. I checked and they're like, well, yeah, 14-day return policy. I had full intention to, and because that 14-day return policy, if you buy an Apple machine inside of Black Friday, towards the end of the year, the 14-day return policy doesn't start until Christmas Day.
No.
So I bought it like a week after Thanksgiving. I kept it all of December. January 17th was my day to turn it back in, and I got to about the last week of December, and I'm like, I'm not giving this thing back. I love it.
I had actually switched to a Chromebook for the last 2 years.
How do you like it?
So I had a Pixel, and, okay. and that to me...
I know nothing about these.
So the Chromebook is great, but the Pixel was Google's flagship version of the Chromebook,
okay.
and it was a touchscreen. And I was really nervous, like when I switched to the Chromebook full time. I was like, I don't think I can do this. I gave up my MacBook. I just don't really think I can live only in the browser.
Yeah.
And I decided I was going to jump 2 feet in. I actually flew to Europe for 3 weeks with just a Chromebook.
Whoa.
And everything in me, I mean, I literally maybe had a panic attack sitting in the airport. Like, what was I thinking? I don't have a real machine.
Yeah.
But the truth is that those 3 weeks changed my mind. There's nothing that I do that sits on the desktop. Everything I do, I mean, I'm a huge photographer,
yeah.
and, you know, 3 weeks in Europe, bring my camera, just stick my SD card in, and it goes straight up to, well, it was Picasa at the time.
Yeah.
So all browser-based, all the editing is in the browser now. I don't use anything on the desktop. So having that Chromebook was awesome. I love my Chromebook. Plus, it had 3G built into it, so I was never offline.
Yeah.
I could always get on an LTE connection. Absolutely adored it. And the only reason I went back to a MacBook with my new role
I'm about
is...
to say, I see that sticking out of your bag a bit.
Because I'm trying to be a developer again.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted Eclipse on my desktop.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, but for example, AppScript is all on the web. So mm-hmm. I could do that on my Chromebook, but it's Eclipse that I have sitting on it.
For doing Java stuff? Or
yeah. Just Eclipse because I wanted to see how apps APIs worked inside of most of our developers are using.
Most of the developers are using Eclipse?
As far as I know right now, yeah.
Okay. What are like the main languages at Google? It's Java, JavaScript?
Yeah, we have a lot of developers using Python.
Python, okay.
Java, Node.
That's me. I've gone 2 feet into Node. I absolutely love it.
Everything. Yeah, that's my next thing to learn.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You learn JavaScript, and it's way on. And now we're going way off on a tangent.
I know. I think we've gone off on a lot of tangents.
Oh yeah,
so
yeah.
That's okay.
The thing that gets me about Node is, by saying this is not saying anything negative about other things. But so I'm background C# guy, right? ASP.NET C#. Yeah. And so it's. When I first got into this business, I was doing mostly web-based work. So all HTML, all JavaScript, the HTML kind of stuff and everything. CSS didn't exist at the time. And then I went off on the whole SharePoint thing, was all server-side stuff. And then I started getting back into the client-side stuff when Microsoft started pushing this new model of saying, yeah, you're not working inside SharePoint anymore. You're working either in the client or you're working outside. I'm like, well, let's just try the client. Let's do the JavaScript side. And I hated it at first, got more into it. Now I do like working in JavaScript. Now I started playing with Node just recently, and the ecosystem around the Node community and all of the tooling and all the like the developer tooling, not just like, I don't mean just like IDEs, but I mean like all the developer tools that are out there and that are on NPM, that you can get through NPM and
yes.
that you can get with Node. It's all of a sudden just kind of had this epiphany. I was like, wait a minute. So I'm building a website. That website's going to have a web API to it. It's going to also have a web application component, so then it makes sense to use something like Angular. I'm writing the Angular piece already in JavaScript. So server-side, I can run server-side stuff using Node or IOJS, whichever one I want. And now all my JavaScript is running server-side. If I have any kind of a build engine that I need to do, I don't need to do these XML files I used to do with like MS Build. Now I can do all that with Gulp, which is all JavaScript. I'm like, everything I'm doing is JavaScript. It's one language, full stack, all the way across.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love the fact that Microsoft fully embraces Node. I mean, I do all the Node work I do all goes up in Azure and runs in Azure websites. So it's just it runs on Windows, it runs on Mac. We did the hackathon. I was showing you had to stand up a little web server to get stuff running. it's like, just do this on NPM. We were most surprised that probably of the 11 teams, probably two of them were Windows. No coincidence, they were the ones that had the most trouble because they had corporate policies on their machine, group policies that were blocking them from installing certain certificates and stuff. But it was great because they just go, yeah, you just need to fire up a web server. You just go here, web server just pops right up. It doesn't matter, it's Node, so you can run on any of them that you want.
Yeah, I didn't know much about Node, but my new boss, who, by the way, spent 19 years at Microsoft, so we speak a similar language.
Yeah.
My new boss challenged me every Friday I have to write code. And so I did some AppScript first, and now my next challenge is Node. So I've been doing lots of reading about it, but I haven't worked with it yet.
So I can send you something. So my birthday was last weekend.
I know. Right? Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Great gift, by the way. Too bad it was cloudy.
I haven't gotten to use it yet. I got a telescope.
I've never.
So for the listeners who are not friends with on Facebook, please don't reach out and try and friend me because I don't do that. Unless we've sat down and have a drink, that's usually at least the first bar that we got to cross to be friends on Facebook. But I'm a space nut, right?
I know.
And I've never looked through a telescope.
Never?
I've never.
You've never, like, borrowed one from someone?
Never. I might have done it as a kid, like in elementary school or something, but I've never looked through a telescope.
Your wife certainly got you an awesome gift.
My whole family, the kids did it and everything. And I'm also a photography buff, and they got me the kit to hook up my camera to it. So I can't wait. And then, of course, I got it on Saturday. Rained all day, right? Rained all day, overcast. Sunday, and of course a rocket went off. SpaceX or somebody launched a rocket. They launched a rocket on Cape Canaveral, and I can see it from my driveway, not through the cloud cover. Sunday, completely overcast the entire day. Monday, completely overcast the entire day. Sun came out in the afternoon, clouds came back in the evening. I was scrambling trying to get ready for this conference. Tuesday morning flew out. It is put together and sitting in my bedroom, pointing out the window, but the caps are still on the lenses. I still haven't gotten to look through it yet. I'm going nuts. I was like, I want to play.
Yeah, and you got the camera. I can't wait to see the pictures.
I can't wait. I gotta find something first. So I'm gonna go for the moon first.
Literally, that's pretty easy to find.
No, because it's easy to find.
But, too bad, because you just missed the fact that I think it was like last week. It just ended this week, right? You could have gotten Venus, Mercury, and the moon all in one shot.
Did you see that picture that was floating out on Imager from Los Angeles? It was
probably
Los Angeles.
That was beautiful.
Well, unfortunately, this interview ended a little abruptly because my memory card on the microphone filled up and I didn't notice it as we kept talking, but we were just rambling on and on. So I just really want to thank you, Julie, for coming on to the show. We had a great chat here, and I hope you guys picked up on some stuff with understanding a little bit more about how the Google Cloud and Google for Work is actually set up and what options are available to you, and as they compare with things like Office 365 and AWS and Azure. So with that, see everybody next week.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.